Morning, today's Daf and Shabbos, Kuf Lamed Zayin. We are finishing up this morning the 19th Perek of Masechet Shabbos, Perek Rebbe Elazar de Mila, and we are going to be concluding on a couple of topics regarding Mila. Let's begin our Mishnah. Mishnah begins on the top of Kuf Lamed Zayin, Amad Aleph, Mishai Yilosh Netinokas. The person had two babies, Echelamol Achar Shabbos, Vechelamol B'Shabbos. And one verse was supposed to occur on Sunday, and the other one was supposed to occur on Shabbos itself. So that means to say that the Moah had responsibility to give a bris to two babies, and one of them was born on Shabbos, the other one was born on Sunday. And so for one of these babies now they have to do a Mila for, so one of them is going to be have the allowance to override Shabbos, and the other one is not going to have the allowance to override Shabbos. In fact, for the other one, the Sunday baby, so Shabbos is premature. In other words, Shabbos is not yet the mitzvah. Mitzvah of Mila is only from day 8 and onward, as we already established earlier. And so that means to say that for one of them, he has an allowance to be Mechal Shabbos, and the other one, he does not have the allowance to be Mechal Shabbos, v'shachach. Now this mole forgot, umalot shel echa b'Shabbos. And what he did by accident is he took the baby for Sunday, and he did the bris of the Sunday baby on Shabbos. Mishnah says, under those circumstances, chayev. This mole now is going to have to bring a carbon chatas. This mole now was Mechal Shabbos, albeit he, of course, he did it b'shogeg. He did not do it intentionally. And as we're going to be discussing over the course of our first sugya this morning, there is a certain excuse that he has, a rationalization in the fact that he was involved in doing a mitzvah, but nevertheless he took the wrong baby. And so for this baby where there is no allowance to do the mila on Shabbos, so now he violated Shabbos and now has to bring a carbon chatas. Okay. He has to bring a carbon chatas. Rashi over here writes, Rashi, the first Rashi in the Mishnah, Dita'a bidbar mitzvah velo asa mitzvah. Who? So Rashi over here gives us the key words in which we're going to be saying over again and again repeatedly throughout this first sugya, and that is the idea of being toa bidvar mitzvah. Meaning that, generally speaking, if a person violates Shabbos in a state of unawareness, meaning he was absent-minded, he forgot, so the requirement is, as we've discussed time and again, we discussed it extensively in the seventh parak of our Masechta, and that is, you have to bring a carbon chatos. If you allow yourself to lapse into unawareness and forget about the Shabbos, you woke up in the morning, you thought it was Sunday, and meanwhile it was Shabbos, and you cooked, so you bring a carbon chatos. But over here, as we're going to be discussing over the course of this first sugya, on the other hand, there is a level of, we can excuse the behavior. Now, over here, in this case, we're not excusing the behavior, but at least we think we can excuse the behavior in that, what are you doing? You're tobid var mitzvah. Meaning, this is a moel who, in fact, has a mila to do this Shabbos. It just happens to be that he took the wrong baby. So what Rashi over here points out in our first case in the Mishnah is that, yes, that is an excuse, but according to the way we're presenting right now, it's not a good enough excuse. And I want to go back to the Rashi and reread the critical lines of Rashi. Rashi writes over here, tobid var mitzvah, velo asa mitzvah. The truth of the matter is that even though, yes, he was engaged in doing a mitzvah, but over here, did he accomplish a mitzvah? No. V'avar lei chabura shelo letzarech, uv'hafil Rabbi Yehoshua moda. And Rashi points out over here, so if you didn't do a mitzvah, so what have you done? So you have now made a wound on the baby in a situation where there is no mitzvah. So under those circumstances, the way Rashi describes it, it is a chabura shelo letzarech. So you made a wound on Shabbos. And as a result of that, you are now in violation of Shabbos. And so therefore, you have to bring a carbon chatas. That's the first case of our Mishnah. Just for a moment, let's spend some time discussing. You made a wound on somebody. That's a chabura. And a chabura, we discussed already earlier in the Masechta in terms of the liability for a chabura. We've discussed it already numerous times. There is an important discussion that we had earlier in the Masechta regarding mekalkel b'chabura. Go back to Daf Kuvav, and you remember the discussion we had, Mekalkel b'chabura, so actually we lined it up as a machlokas tanayim. In other words, if I do something which is destructive in nature on Shabbos, so is there going to be a liability altogether on Chilul Shabbos? And the way we presented it back on Daf Kuvav, the Gemara presented it, machlokas tanayim between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. And so, and ironically, we already made this point, this is some time ago, it's a month ago, but we already made this point, ironically, that Rabbi Shimon comes out to be the machmir, meaning mekalkel b'chabura is going to be chayv according to Rabbi Shimon, and mekalkel b'chabura is going to be potter according to Rabbi Yehuda. So over here, you're making a chabura on Shabbos in the absence of a mitzvah, so it's just simply a chabura, and you're going to be chayv a karban chatas. So I think the easiest way to say it, perhaps the easiest way to say it, is just simply that our discussion over here falls in line with the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, that if you're mekalkel b'chabura, you're going to be chayiv. That's probably the easiest way to say it. I'm sure there are fancier ways to say it, but nevertheless, The idea is that despite the fact that the Moah had another baby whose bris was this Shabbos, but he took the Sunday baby, it was premature, it's not yet the mitzvah, and so therefore he did a chabura. Rashi describes chabur shelo letzarech, and therefore he's chayav karban chatas. Okay, that's the first case of the Mishnah, and we continue. Echel amol be'erev Shabbos ve'echel amol b'Shabbos. Ah, now the Mishnah brings us to another scenario, very similar, but with an important detail change. And that is that the two babies that the Moah had on Shabbos, one baby was a Friday baby, the other baby was a Shabbos baby. That means to say that one was born 8 days ago and the other one was born 9 days ago. V'shachach umal etshal er Shabbos b'Shabbos. And what the Mol did by accident is that he took the Friday baby and he did that baby on Shabbos. He did the Mila of the Friday baby on Shabbos. So under these circumstances now, is he going to be Chayav Karban Chatas? So what has he done? He's done a Mila, but Mila shelo bezmano. Rabbi Eliezer mechayav Chatas, Rabbi Yeshua Poter. So here are Machlokus Tanayim, where Rabbi Lazar says that the Moel under discussion is going to be Chayav Karban Chatas. Because according to Rabbi Eliezer, it is a Mila Shelo Bizmana. And if you look at Rashi, Rashi writes over here, Mila Shelo Bizmana in a Docha Shabbos. V'af agav d'tab d'var mitzvah sh'ayatar ba'osu sh'shabbos mitoch kach tach b'zeh, av b'zeh asa mitzvah. Sh'arei ra'yuhu lamul el she'inu Docha Shabbos. Sfir le Rabbi Lazar tov d'var mitzvah v'asa mitzvah sh'esh b'chiv chatas chayav. So, as far as Rabbi Eliezer is concerned, same story. Meaning, this was not the baby which was allowed to override the Shabbos. And even though, again, there is a level of a rationalization of an excuse that could be given to this Moel, because there is another baby that's supposed to be done that Shabbos, but he took the Friday baby. A Mila Shalom Bismana does not override Shabbos, and therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, they're going to be Chayev. But what about the sheet of Rabbi Yoshua? Rabbi Yoshua says that under these circumstances, he's going to be Pater. The Moel is going to be Pater. Why? So Rashi over here writes at the end of that Rashi, Svirle d'tal b'dvar mitzvah v'asa mitzvah pater. Because according to Rabbi Yoshua, now you have a good enough excuse in terms of why, in fact, you violated the Shabbos. Now when I say an excuse, by the way, it goes without saying, but I'm going to say it because just to be clear, it goes without saying, there's not an allowance to do so, meaning the Mila Shelo Bizmana did not override the Shabbos, and he had no heter to do so. But in terms of his liability of bringing a karban chatas, because right now this Moel had two babies, and one of those babies' bris actually was supposed to occur on Shabbos. So the idea that he has a knife in his hand and ready to do the Mila, so that is justifiable. And the fact that he took the wrong baby, but the fact is, according to Rabbi Eliezer, is that it was Mila Shelo Bizmana. But was the mitzvah accomplished? Did he do the mitzvah? And the answer, of course, is yes. Now, it was Shabbos and didn't have the right to override the Shabbos, but he was Tovid Bar Mitzvah because he had another baby to be done that day, plus he took a baby whose mitzvah, it wasn't for today, but there is a mitzvah today. And so therefore, this is Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah, V'asa Mitzvah, and he accomplished the mitzvah. And so therefore, Pater is going to be exempt from having to bring Karmel Chatas. So what we have over here in our Mishnah are two scenarios where you had either Shabbos Sunday baby, and you did the Sunday baby by accident on Shabbos, or you had a Friday Shabbos baby, where you did the Friday baby by accident on Shabbos. And now the question of accident and shogeg, and whether or not it reaches the threshold of liability to bring a karban chatas, is under discussion. And just quickly to recap, in a scenario where he took the Sunday baby on Shabbos, that's a Mila Shelo Bizmana, so he was toa bidvar mitzvah because he did have a Shabbos baby to do the Mila on, but at the very same time, however, the baby that he took, he did the Mila, and there was no mitzvah, it's toa bidvar mitzvah, velo asa mitzvah. The way our Mishnah presents it, everyone would agree, he's Chayav Karban Chatas. Where's the area of debate? In the Friday Shabbos scenario, where he takes the Friday baby, and by accident, takes that Friday baby into Shabbos, and does the Mila of that Friday baby on Shabbos. Under those circumstances, he was Toa B'Dvar Mitzvah, V'Asa Mitzvah, Machlokus between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer still is of the opinion that such an individual would be Chayav Karban Chatas, and Rabbi Eliezer says no. Toa B'Dvar Mitzvah, V'Asa Mitzvah is going to be Pater. This is the presentation as our Mishnah gives it. And now the Gemara is going to point out there are two other ways to present these scenarios. So our Mishnah presents one version, and as we're going to see, the Amoraim have in them traditions, Masoros, of two other ways to present it. Now, Rav Huna Masni Chayv, we're starting with the Gemara. Rav Huna has a version that says the word Chayv. Rav Yehuda Masni Pater. Rav Yehuda has a version that says Pater. All this will be explained momentarily. Rav Huna Masni Chayv D'Tanya. Rav Huna has a version that says Chayv. Now, we're going to go through a Braisa, and the Braisa is going to give us Rav Huna's version of the debate. Truth of the matter is that everything that we present in the Mishnah, we don't have to change a thing, because Rav Huna's Braisa is going to mimic, echo exactly the points of our Mishnah, and so we get to go through this somewhat quickly. Amar Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar, lo nechelku Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Yeshua, amisha hayu lo beis tinokos, echelamol b'shabbos v'echelamol achar shabbos. So once again, in this brisa, it's the same thing as our Mishnah. We have a Shabbos Sunday combination. One baby's bris was for Shabbos, the other one was for Sunday. V'shachach umal et shal achar hashabbos. I'm sorry. V'shachach umal et shal achar hashabbos b'shabbos. And he took the Sunday baby and by accident did it on Shabbos. Shuchayev. Under those circumstances, everyone, meaning Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer, would both be of the opinion that such an individual, the mole, would be chayev karban chatas. Where they had two babies, one was a Friday baby, one was a Shabbos baby, and he took the Friday baby by accident into Shabbos, obviously skipping Friday's bris, and he gave the Mila on Shabbos to the Friday baby. So the Braisa says, like we set it up in our Mishnah, Rabbi Lezer says that such a mole is still going to be chayev. And Rabbi Yeshua says it's going to be Potter. Ushneim lo lamdua ela me avodas kochavim. And the two of them learn it from Avodah Zarah. What does Avodah Zarah have anything to do over here? So Rashi points out over here, Avodah Zarah, we're talking about the Parsha of the Karban Chatas by Avodah Zarah. Meaning, the Parsha of Karban Chatas in general is located in Parshas Vayikra Perek Dalet. However, there is one other Parsha in the Torah that deals with the Karban Chatas, and that is in Parsha Shlach. Oddly enough, in Bamidbar, tucked away after the story of the Meraglim, so the Torah introduces us to a Karban Chatas that one gives for violating Avodah Zarah b'shogeg. And there, Rashi quotes over here the Pasuk, Torah Achas Yelachem, that even though this Parsha is set off from the rest of the standard Karban Chatas, at the same time, however, this is now going to create a standard regarding Karban Chatas. So whatever the threshold is when it comes to Avodah Zarah in terms of bringing the Karban Chatas, we're going to use that as our baseline in terms of setting a standard for what a Karban Chatas is brought for in general. Now, what do we say regarding Avodah Zarah? Rabbi Lazar Savar, Kavodah Kochavim. Ma Avodah Kochavim, Amar Rachmano, Lo Savid, V'chi Avid Mechayiv. Hachanami Lo Shna. Rabbi Lazar's position is very straightforward. The Torah says not to be Ovid Avodah Zarah. You were Ovid Avodah Zarah. What were the circumstances? Was it excusable? Was it justifiable? Was there any kind of rationalization? No. In other words, the Torah just simply says, don't do it. And if you do it, and if you do it b'shogeg, so you're going to be chayav karban chatas. Hear the same thing as well. Meaning a person was not supposed to do that mila on Shabbos. He did the mila on Shabbos when the Torah told him not to do that mila on Shabbos. Yes, there's context. Yes, there's circumstances. Yes, there was another baby to be done. Yes, with this baby that we did, we accomplished something. It was a mila shalom bezmana. That's all wonderful. But Avodah Zarah teaches us that when we look at the simple mechanics of how Karban Chatas works, if the Torah says not to do it and you did it, albeit b'shogeg, you have to bring the Karban Chatas. So here Rabbi Eliezer says it's the same thing. Rabbi Yeshua, hasam delav mitzvah, hacha mitzvah. And Rabbi Yeshua says a basic distinction can be made in the case of the Avodah Zarah versus our discussion over here. In the case of the Avodah Zarah, when the Torah says not to be Ovid Avodah Zarah, the Torah just simply says, don't be Ovid Avodah Zarah, and you did. But there wasn't anything pulling against you in terms of why you were Ovid Avodah Zarah. Over here, there was a push and there was a pull. Over here, yes, you violated Shabbos, but at the same time, you were in the process of doing a mitzvah. Remember, in the way we're setting it up right now, this is the Friday baby. So you are doing a mitzvah on Shabbos, albeit you don't have a heter to violate the Shabbos, but in the very least, though, however, you are accomplishing a mitzvah. So a distinction can be drawn between the case of Avodah Zarah and the case of Mila B'Shabbos, albeit it's a Mila Shalom B'Zmana, but at least you're doing a mitzvah. Good. This is now the first way we're presenting the Machlokas, Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yeshua. This is Rav Huna's presentation of the Machlokas. This happens to be the exact same as we saw back in the Mishnah. The reason why we went through all that is because there's going to be two other Braisas that are going to present it somewhat differently. Rabbi Yehuda Masni Pater D'Tanya. And now we get to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, who is also going to present the Machlokas. But now things are going to flip a little bit. So I'm going to slow down just a little bit so that we can just pause and think as we're going. Amar D'Tanya. We learned in the Braisa. Amar Rabbi Meir Lo Nechelku Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Yeshua. Amisha Hayilo Beis Tinokos Echelamo Be'erev Shabbos Vechelamo B'Shabbos. V'shachach Humalet Shal Erev Shabbos V'Shabbos Shu Pater. Here, in this second version of the Machlokas, we're going to start off like this. If you have two babies, a Friday baby and a Shabbos baby, and the mole takes the Friday baby and by accident brings it into Shabbos and does the meal on Shabbos, here, according to everyone, consensus is that you're not going to bring a Karban Chatas. Now, the reason why is because you were toeh b'dvar mitzvah. Again, the Mohel himself knows that he has a milah to do the Shabbos, a required milah to do the Shabbos. Now, it happens to have taken another baby by accident, and he got a little confused, and he did this milah on Shabbos. He was toeh b'dvar mitzvah, and not only that, but also it was post-eighth day. He took this as a Friday baby, so that means this is day 9. He was toeh b'dvar mitzvah ve'asa mitzvah, and he did the mitzvah. So in this version now, Rav Yehuda's version, which, by the way, in the Braisa is also Rebbe Meir's version. So in this version, we have both toeh b'dvar mitzvah ve'asa mitzvah, and we have consensus. This is enough justification so that he wouldn't have to bring a carbon chatos. Ma nechleku, where does the debate exist between Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Yeshua? Amisha yilo beis tinokos echel amol achar Shabbos v'echel amol b'Shabbos. It's the case of the Shabbos Sunday baby scenario. V'shachachu ma'ala shal achar Shabbos v'Shabbos. The Moa by accident took Sunday's baby, did the bris on Shabbos. She Rebbe Eliezer mechayev chatos Rebbe Yeshua poter. Ushneim lo lamdua ela me'avodis kochavim. And here the Braisa ends off in the same way. But now the entire debate revolves around the case where Sunday's baby, the Moel, did by accident on Shabbos. Is such an individual, such a Moel, going to have to bring a carbon chatos? And here now is the debate between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Now, in this scenario over here, as we've gone over, but now this is the debate. This Moel took Sunday's baby on Shabbos. So, was he toeh b'dvar mitzvah? Yeah, sure. Because there was another baby on that Shabbos that the Moel had to do, which did require him to do it on Shabbos. So he's certainly toeh b'dvar mitzvah. Did he accomplish the mitzvah when he did the milah of Sunday's baby on Shabbos? And the answer, of course, is no. That was a milah shelo bizmana. That was a milah at an inappropriate time. It was premature. And so no mitzvah was accomplished. And so we're going to now try to understand each of the positions, Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Yeshua, and the Gemara goes through. Rebbe Elazar, Savar Kavodis Kol Chavim, Avodis Kol Chavim, Mam Rechman Alo Savi Vichi Avid Mechayev, Hachinami Lo Shna. And so the argument for Rebbe Elazar, as we already pointed out, since the carbon chatos by the Avodah Zarah serves as a base model in terms of when a person has to bring carbon chatos, so look, by Avodah Zarah, Torah says not to be Ovid Avodah Zarah. The person was Ovid Avodah Zarah. He's Chayev Karmen Chatos. Again, B'shogig, of course. Same thing over here. The Torah says not to violate the Shabbos. This Moel violated Shabbos. And so therefore, he is going to have to bring a Karmen Chatos. Rabbi Yoshua, Hasam lo Tarid Mitzvah, Hacha Tarid Mitzvah. But according to Rabbi Yoshua, there's a difference. Now, let's read the words carefully. Over there by Avodah Zarah, he wasn't Torid B'mitzvah. He wasn't preoccupied with a mitzvah. Over here, he was preoccupied with a mitzvah. Now, in this version, the difference, the notable difference between this version and the previous version, is that you don't need the accomplishment of a mitzvah. You just simply need preoccupation of a mitzvah. You need to have a mindset of, I'm doing a mitzvah, which the Moel is in that mindset, and justifiably, because on that Shabbos there is another baby, where that baby needs to be done on Shabbos. Now, by accident, he takes the Sunday's baby and he does a Sunday baby on Shabbos. And yes, it's premature. And yes, he didn't accomplish a mitzvah. But in the very least, he was toreid b'dvar mitzvah. He was preoccupied in doing a mitzvah. And according to Rabbi Yeshua, that is cause enough, that's justifiable enough, so that he would not have to bring a carbon chatas. That's according to the second version. So far, what we have right now are two versions of how to present this idea of toreid b'dvar mitzvah. In version number 1, if no mitzvah is being accomplished, chayv karbon chatos. If a mitzvah is being accomplished, so then machlokes Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. In version number 2, if the mitzvah is being accomplished, everyone says you're putter from a karbon chatos. If you were just torud, if you were preoccupied in doing a mitzvah, machlokes between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. And now we have a third version of the machlokes tani Rabbi Chia. Omer haya Rabbi Meir lo nechluku Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yeshua al mishayilo beis tinokos. So now here in this third version, this is a Braisa. Rabbi Chia taught this Braisa. And we're going to start off like this. There is no debate between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua with two babies. One baby whose bris is going to be on a Friday. And the other one who's going to be on a Shabbos. So here, we're going to start off with a scenario of two babies. Friday baby, Shabbos baby. For the Friday baby, there is no justification to do the bris on Shabbos. It's a milah shelo bizmana. For the Shabbos baby, there obviously is a justification to do so. And here the Moel takes the Friday baby on Shabbos and does the milah of the Friday baby on Shabbos. So here in this version, according to everybody, you're chayv a karban chatos. So in other words, even though you were not only tarud b'dvar mitzvah, You were Torah bidvar mitzvah. You were Torah bidvar mitzvah. You also asa mitzvah. Meaning for that baby, for that Friday baby, was the bris accomplished on Shabbos? Presumably the answer, of course, is yes. Because it is now after the eighth day. And yet, in this version, kulam, according to everybody, you're going to be chayv karban chatas. Now here's where it's going to get tricky. The machlokus Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar, in this third version, is going to be when you had a Sunday, you had a Shabbos Sunday baby. You had two babies. One's bris scheduled for Shabbos, the other for Sunday. And by accident, you take the Sunday baby and you do the mila on Shabbos. Rabbi Eliezer, Mechayiv Chatzos, Rabbi Yeshua Poter. Here we have a debate between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer says Chayiv, Rabbi Yeshua is Poter. Rabbi Yeshua at this point in time is nearly impossible to understand in this third version. Within the framework of this third version, Rabbi Yeshua is so difficult. And the Gemara formulates, Hashta Rabbi Yeshua Sefer Delo Ka'avid Mitzvah Poter, Reisha De Ka'avid Mitzvah Mechayiv. In this third scenario, we have Rabbi Yeshua for the Sunday baby whose bris was done on Shabbos, who says that you're putter. So that means to say that you were excusable because even though you didn't accomplish a mitzvah, but you were preoccupied in mitzvah. So wouldn't you venture a guess to suggest that according to Rabbi Yeshua, if you had the Friday Shabbos scenario where you took the Friday baby by accident and you did the mila on Shabbos, of course you're going to be putter. Because there, not only were you preoccupied in doing a mitzvah, you accomplished the mitzvah. And so, there does not seem to be a logical flow to this last version of the Machlokas Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. But, Amri Debei Rav Yanai, but the Gemara defends it. The Gemara feels that there is a way to explain it. Reisha Kagon. So, Rabbi Yanai says like this. The scenario over here, we're going to have to tweak it just a little bit in order to give sense and some sort of logical flow. And that is Kagon Shekadam Umal Shal Shabbos Be'erev Shabbos. Over here, in this third version, the way it was set up going into Shabbos goes like this. You did have two babies. You had a Friday baby and a Shabbos baby. Now this mo'el was a little bit more than just a bit confused. What this mo'el did is he took the Shabbos baby and he did the mila for the Shabbos baby now on Friday. Now, of course, he shouldn't have done that. It was a mix-up. Okay, but he did it. And now, going into Shabbos, so what mila is there for him to do? And the answer is, there is no mila for him to do. Once you're going into that Shabbos, already having done the Shabbos baby on Friday, so now let's consider. So for our Shabbos baby, the mila was already done. There's simply now nothing to do. And yes, there is a discussion to be had regarding Hatafas Dam Bris, but just in terms of the mitzvah of mila itself to override the Shabbos, the discussion is over. He did the mila already on Friday. Now what about the Friday baby? As far as the Friday baby is concerned, going into Shabbos, so there's no mila to do there as well. That's a mila shel abizmano. So that means to say that after the mola, and we're assuming, of course, that the mola recognizes mistake already going into Shabbos. So that means going into this Shabbos, so this mola now should basically take all of his tools, the knife and everything, and put them away. Because at this point in time, there's simply nothing to accomplish this Shabbos. For the Shabbos baby, the mila is done. For the Friday baby, it's mila shel abizmano. Ah, so now we understand. Given that this is the context, so now, delo nitna Shabbos lidachos. So Shabbos now, he has no business even taking out his knife on Shabbos. And so by virtue of him doing so, so he's going to be chayv karban chatos. Again, we're obviously discussing a case where he forgot, but now it's no longer excusable, no longer it's justifiable because he simply has no mila to do on that particular Shabbos. Sefer nitna Shabbos lidachos. On the other hand, in the second case of this third brisa, where there is a Shabbos Sunday scenario where there is a baby to be done on Shabbos, so now we're back to Torah bidvar mitzvah, and that's why it's excusable. So Amalei Ravashi, so Ravashi says, L'Rav Kahana, Reishanami nitna Shabbos lidachos agabi tinokas da'ama. So the Gemara says, okay, look, I understand that for this mole in this scenario, the way we gave it context. It's true that for him, there is no mila to be done. But I'm sure there's a mila that's supposed to be done somewhere. So can't we say that since a mila needs to be done somewhere, so it's not out of the world to suggest that he's thinking mila? So the Gemara answers simply, L'hai gavra mia, lo is yahiv. Okay, true. There must be a mila being done somewhere. But for this mola, however, there is no mila that's being done. And so as a result of that, says the Gemara, for him, there really is no justification in terms of why it is that he took out his knife and he did the milah. So ends our discussion of the Gemara regarding the topic of Torah b'Dvar Mitzvah. A Mishnah describing a scenario in which if in fact there ever is going to be a case where the mole is doing a milah on Shabbos without the license to do so, without the authority to do so, he does not have the right to violate the Shabbos, but still, because of either accomplishing another milah or because of the preoccupation of doing another milah, would that be grounds enough to exempt him from having to bring a Karban Chatos? That was our first discussion of this morning. Continuing now in the Mishnah. Katan nima l'shmona l'tisha l'asar l'achad asar l'yud beis lo pachos v'lo yoser. A milah can be done on day 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, not any time earlier, not any time later. Now, when we say not any time earlier, that we've already established. Milah can only be done from day 8 and onward. Not any time later, sure, it could be done later. If the milah was not done on day 12, you do it on day 13. What the Mishnah means to say is that sometimes the halacha is going to demand that milah be done on day 8. Sometimes it'll demand that it'll be done on day 9, et cetera, up to day 12. Meaning because of circumstances, halacha is going to require the milah to be done on day 12, and all this will be explained right now. HaKeitzad Kedarka L'Shmona. So first of all, your standard milah is going to be on day 8. Nola L'Bein HaShmashos Nimo L'Tes. Now let's say the baby is born B'Nei HaShmashos. So the baby is born in this twilight period between one day and the next. So now the milah is going to occur on day 9. Explanation? Very simple. Because when the baby is born, we do not know whether the baby was born. Let's say the baby is born this evening. Right? Today's Tuesday, the baby is born this evening. But again, I say evening, I mean during B'Nei HaShmashos, twilight. So now, was the baby born on Tuesday or on Wednesday? The Suffolk tells us we don't know. B'Nei HaShmashos is Suffolk Yom Suffolk Laila. So if we start now counting from Wednesday, so then the milah is going to be 8 days from Wednesday. But we don't know the baby was born on Wednesday. The baby could have been born from Tuesday. So going counting back from Tuesday, it's going to be 9 days. It doesn't mean that we're definitively saying it's 9 days, but at least it's possible that it could be 9 days. Now, we're not going to be doing the bris on Tuesday because Tuesday may be premature because the baby was born B'Nei HaShmashos. And so that would be now from Wednesday only 7 days. So we're going to start the count from Wednesday, but recognizing that Tuesday also may be a day as well. So that would be 9 days. Now, B'Nei HaShmashos shal erev Shabbos nimo la'asara. Now, we're going to do the same thing now, but the B'Nei HaShmashos, the baby was born, was on a Friday, late Friday afternoon, going into Friday night, the B'Nei HaShmashos of Shabbos. So under those circumstances, the bris is going to be on the 10th day. Now, how do we get to the 10th day? It's everything we did with one more feature, and that is that, look, we can't start counting from Friday because maybe the baby was born on Shabbos. Okay, so we'll start counting from Shabbos, and we'll do the bris next Shabbos. No, we can't do that as well. Because the only right a mullah has to do the milah on Shabbos is only if I definitively know that the baby was born the previous Shabbos. But we don't know that. So we're going to have to postpone it another day. And that's how it gets to day 10. Meaning counting back from Friday, the bris is going to be on the following Sunday. And so that's 10 days. Yom tov la'achar Shabbos nimullah achar asar. Now in terms of going now one more day, so let's venture a scenario in which you have the baby born being born B'Nei HaShmashos Friday. The B'Nei HaShmashos of the Shabbos, and now you're going to have to go another week, and you can't do it on Shabbos, as we already explained, and if Sunday comes out to be a Yontif, so then you're going to postpone it to Monday. That's 11 days. Now, we're going to do this one more day, and that lets now paint a scenario in which the Sunday and Monday turn out to be Rosh Hashanah. Now, in our fixed calendar, as we've gone over time and again, that's not going to happen. Rosh Hashanah is not going to fall out on a Sunday, Lo Adu Rosh. But in the time of the Mishnayos, it is clear that without a set calendar, it is possible for Rosh Hashanah to fall out on a Sunday. So now if I have Rosh Hashanah falling out on a Sunday or on a Monday, I'm sorry, Sunday and a Monday. So now in our scenario where the baby's born, B'Nei HaShmashos of Shabbos, so now it's going to, the bris is by halacha going to have to be postponed until Tuesday, which will be 12 days later. So these are the scenarios in which a milah is going to occur either anywhere in the range between day 8 to day 12, depending on the halacha considerations that we just went through. Interesting, the Mishnah over here does not give a scenario of Yontov Sheni Shel Galios, meaning what about the 2 days of Yontov outside of Eretz Yisrael? Now, why doesn't the Mishnah give that scenario? So you could say it in one of two ways, and this is a machlokas of Rishonim. One way to say it is because the Mila, even though Shelo Bezmana, even though Mila Shelo Bezmana does not override Shabbos, it does not override Yontov, but it could override Yontov Sheni Shel Galios. That's a chiddush. That's a possibility. But the easier way to say it, is that the reason why the Mishnah doesn't mention Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios is because the Mishnayos are authored in Eretz Yisrael. And Eretz Yisrael, they didn't observe Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios. They observed 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, as we've already established back in the after Rosh Hashanah, but they did not observe Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios. So it could just very simply be that the reason why the Mishnah gave 2 days of Rosh Hashanah is simply because in Eretz Yisrael, that's what they observed, not Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios. Anyway, we continue. Whether or not Milo Shel Abizmana overrides Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios, Machlokas Rishonim, the standard practice is that it does not override Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios. Continuing. Kad Nachola Ein Moalanoso Ad Shiavri. Now, if the baby got sick, so the Mila is done, but only after a recovery period. We're going to be discussing that right now. Amar Shmuel. Chaltaso Chama Nos Nilo Kozaim Lahavroso. Shmuel's of the position that when the baby is sick and the baby now is recovered, so you give him 7 days before you do the Mila, meaning that there has to be a wait period between recovery and doing the Mila. Now, the Gemara now wants to know, is there a requirement of waiting 7 full and complete days? Meaning Shmuel's halacha is that recovery requires 7-day period. When we're asking about the 7 days, specifically, is that 7 24-hour units. Tashma de niluda yom hivraso ki yom hivaldo. And we have a brisa to work with. The brisa is very short, but at least it gives us something to work with. The day of birth is like, the day of recovery is like the day of birth. Now, that's the brisa. That's all it says. Now, let us assume that given that we have this kind of comparison, this is what the brisa is suggesting. My love, my yom hivaldo, lo bi'ina me'esleis, av yom hivraso, lo bi'ina me'esleis. So let's take a look at our standard Mila. That's done. Baby's born. Do we punch an hour stamp in terms of the mitzvah of Mila vis-a-vis the birth of the baby? The answer, of course, is no. Meaning the baby could be born the night prior. The baby could be born the morning of. Meaning the baby could be born right before sunset. This counts as day one. And so day one may be just an hour. Could be even less than an hour. And yet that for vis-a-vis Mila is called day one. Now, when you move to day eight, when do you do the bris? In the morning of day eight. So in terms of, is there a standard waiting time for the bris to be done from day one to day eight? The answer, of course, is no. It's just simply 8 days. Day of birth counts as a day, regardless of when during the day the baby is born. And day eight is the Mila, regardless of when during the day you do the Mila. Obviously, it's Rizam Akdim LaMitzvah. You want to do it as early as possible in the morning. But nevertheless, it does not matter what hour of the day. So if that's true regarding Yom Hivaldo, so let's assume now the same thing is Yom Havraso. If the baby were sick and now has a recovery, so maybe when we say 7 days, we just simply mean 7 days like the meal, like the mitzvah of Mila. It doesn't have to be 7 24-hour units. The Gemara suggests, lo adif yom avrasom yom ivado. Dilo yom ivado lo bina meisayis, vilo yom avrasom bina meisayis. The Gemara says, from the Braisa, I can't arrive at that conclusion. The Braisa just simply means that much like the pattern is set, that after the baby is born, you do the bris 8 days later, but the same thing is true regarding recovery. But it could very well be that recovery is more demanding, and that recovery requires the baby now to recuperate from the illness, and it requires 7 complete days, 24 hours each. And it could just simply be that it's a quasi-comparison, but it's not a full comparison between these two points of beginning. We continue now in the Mishnah, the last Mishnah here in our Perek. So now the Mishnah over here is going to get anatomical. Now, you'll remember that we had this discussion just a couple of days ago, Kuflam Gimlam Beis, where we discussed whether the mole did the Mila, he made the cut, but there are still a couple of pieces of skin that are overhanging. And the Braisa that we saw back on Kuflam Gimlam Beis described them as Tzitzin. They are just simply little loose ends of skin, foreskin that have not been cut off. So should they be cut off? So remember the terminology that we used back then, sitzin ma'akvin, sitzin she'ina ma'akvin. So if it is a significant amount, so then, yeah, the mole has to cut them off. And even if it's Shabbos, he has to cut them off. And if it's significant and even the mole is poresh, the mole still has to cut them off. But when it comes to sitzin she'ina ma'akvin, but if they're just simply loose ends that are not legally significant, so the way we presented the Gemara back on Kuflam Gimel Beis, and this is Rashi's presentation, so on Shabbos, if you're poresh, you're eino chozer. But if it's a weekday, so then, of course, you go back and you clean it up, right? We spoke about Hiddur Mitzvah back there on Kuflam Gimel. Anyway, The Braisa just spoke about it in broad terms, but now the Mishnah over here is going to be anatomical and describe it in detail. Eloing sits in the ma'afin esamila. So when we're talking now about what exactly needs to be excised off the area, basar chofes rova atara. So it has to be the skin, the foreskin that is covering the majority of the atara. Now the atara we already described earlier, but here the Mishnah is speaking it out. So presumably the atara over here is the corona. If you take a look at Rashi over here, it's not clear from Rashi whether or not Rashi is defining in that manner. Rashi seems to be describing the entire slanted area as you get to the tip. But nevertheless, the standard, well, it's not Rashi, but the general explanation is that we're describing the rim, the corona rim around, and that area has to be revealed. And if you have any amount of the foreskin that's covering the majority, we're going to define whether we're talking about the circumference or whether we're going to talk about the height. The Gemara is going to discuss that momentarily. But if you have a rove, if you have a majority of it being covered, so that is tzitzin hama'akev, and therefore it has to be cut. Ve'ena ocha b'truma, and the Mishnah also adds, is that even if you have this overlap of foreskin, it's this person now is considered an arel, he's considered uncircumcised, and just as an example of a halach, he can't eat truma. Right? An arel is not allowed to eat truma. We discussed this in Yevamos extensively. So it's a simple fact of the matter that not all the foreskin has been removed, and as long as it's legally significant, so it impedes him now from eating truma. Another halacha regarding the in terms of making sure to cut enough, and that is that let's say the baby's very fat, and it's just a lot of skin wrapping over, and there is a mila that was done, but nevertheless the appearance does not look that way. So then, of course, you need an expert in the field, but make sure to cut enough so that it looks the baby looks like as a mila. Right? Interesting. The Mishnah uses the words marasayin over here. Obviously, this is a private area, which is generally speaking not to be viewed. So under these circumstances, what do we say regarding marasayin? So we generally say by marasayin, even marasayin, which is in private area, right? Afil bechadre chadarim, marasayin is going to be an issue. So it's an interesting usage of the term in the Mishnah to describe that for appearances purposes, you should cut in order to have a not only a mila, but one that is apparent as a mila as well. We're on the top of the Amud Beis, ma below para, it's a mila kilo ma. Like we already explained earlier, there are two membranes of foreskins that cover the area. And they both are going to be excised. As I mentioned already before, Minhag Yisrael has been for generations now, where what the Moel does is the Moel grabs both, pulls them, puts some sort of guard in order to make sure that the baby himself is not going to be cut, and both are cut now at the same time. Back in the day, the old Minhag is that the Moel would be cutting off the outer membrane, and then peeling back the membrane underneath. Regardless, the Mishnah is telling us there are both critical parts of the mila. If the mole only did the mila but not did the priya, so it's ki'ilu lomal, as if the mila has not been done. Tosos over here, take a look at the top Tosos over here. Tosos over here wonders, Tema, my itzterich lemisne hai came into kvartana de basar chofes rovatara ma'akev amila v'chilo para adayin rovatara mechusa. So Tosos says at this point in the Mishnah, meaning this seems to be a superfluous point. The Mishnah already established that if you have any foreskin covering the atara, so it's not going to be a good mila. So if you cut the outer membrane, but you don't take off the inner membrane, so the atara is not being revealed. So Tosos just wonders, what's the chiddush over here? Okay, and Tosos leaves it off as a question. Amar Rabbi Avina, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah Ba'aba, Amar Rav, Basar Chofes Rav Gov'ar, Shal Atara. And so our first halacha here in the Gemara is the following, and that is that a foreskin that goes over the atara, so the Mishnah says if you have rov, so it's ma'akev, it holds back the mitzvah. The person's still considered an arel. And Rashi says over here, you could have understood this in one of two ways. We could have been talking about rov vis-a-vis circumference, or we could have been talking about height. Rashi says the correct way, this is what Rav is teaching us, is that the correct way to understand the Mishnah is that we're going by height. Meaning is that if there's any of the foreskin that is going over the edge of the atara, meaning measuring it now, not from a circumference standpoint, but from a height standpoint, if you just have it going over 50% of the corona, that is going to be considered an impediment to the mila. It's as if the mila has not been accomplished, and that obviously serves as a chumrah, it serves as a stringency, and of course then the mole has to go back and to cut it off. That is what's called Sitzin Hama'akvin. Continuing in the Gemara, V'imaya Babasar, Amar Shmuel Katan HaMesurba Babasar. The Gemara is going to spend just a moment discussing more about our portly little baby. And that, and by the way, the choice of word over here is probably what Rashi is referring to, but I don't have knowledge of French well enough, but it sounds like what Rashi is trying to describe over here. Anyway, the baby is very large, very hefty, and even though the Mila was done, it looks as if the Mila is not done. So at what point in time now does the mole have to go back and try to cut more? And again, obviously, this requires expert hands. So Rowan Oso calls Manshim Iskasha Venira Mahul Eno Sarach Lamol. The Imlav Sarach Lamol. So the Gemara over here gives us a way to try to measure whether or not more needs to be done, and that is look at the baby in an erect state. If the baby's Mila is apparent, so then no more cutting is necessary. The Masisatan, now in the Braisa, it says basically the same point, it just phrases it in the negative. So here in the Braisa, describing again the fat baby. Ronoso calls manchem iskasha ve'eno nire maho. Ain't tzarech lamolo. The imlav ain't tzarech lamolo. If the baby is in an erect state and does not appear like a mila was done, so then a mila needs to be done. Otherwise, a mila does not need to be done. Now, you say it and say it again, and you realize they're basically saying the same thing. One saying in the positive and the other saying in the negative. But they're basically making the same point, which prompts the Gemara to ask, my beinayu. Okay, you say it in the positive, you say it in the negative, but if you're saying the same thing, what's the difference? So the Gemara over here talks about some sort of in-between state, where it's not abundantly clear whether the baby is mild or not mild in this erect state. So are we going? Which side are we going to go on? Are we going to go on the side of it's good or on the side of it's not good? And so in this in-between state, So the way Rashi presents it, Lishmuel, I'm reading the Rashi, by now Nira Ve'eno Nira, Lishmuel Nira Malhu Hu, De Ein Sarach Lamolo, Ha Nira Ve'eno Nira, Sarach. So, according to Shmuel, he has to have the appearance of being Mahu, and once we're in some sort of in-between state, so then he's going to require more cutting, more excising. And Lamasnisa, Eino Nira Hu De Sarach, Ha Nira Ve'eno Nira, Eino Tzarach. Whereas according to the Braisa, in this tweener state, so then there is no requirement to cut off anymore. Okay, so the Gemara says there is a subtle difference between them, and this stage of nira ve'eino nira, obviously, you need to have a working knowledge of the area in order to understand what this real in-between state is. It's easy for me to say in the Gemara. It would be nearly impossible for me to try to demonstrate that practically. Mavalo Paro, the Gemara continues now, Tana Rabbanan, and here we're going to be ending the 19th parak of the Masechta by going over the brachas of the Mila. The mitzvah of Mila, obviously, is a mitzvah assessing in the Torah. It's a positive commandment. And like many mitzvah assessing in the Torah, so a bracha is to be said. And so the Gemara over here is actually going to go through the Nusach HaBracha. Back in brachas, we already made this observation. It is not often and frequent that the Gemara actually goes through Nusach. Meaning Shemona Esrei, the Gemara does not go through Nusach. And the Birchas Shema, the Gemara does not go through Nusach. So, we have one of those moments in time where we're actually given the Nusach HaBracha. So, Tana Rabbanan, Hamal Omer, so that one who's doing the Mila says, Asher Kedishanu Mimsav Zivanu Al HaMila. So, Birchas HaMitzvah. Avia Ben Omer, the father says, Asher Kedishanu Mimsav Zivanu Lachniso Beviso Shal Avram Avinu. A second bracha is made by the father. We're going to come back to this point in just a moment. Trying to understand it a little bit better in terms of why there's a second bracha. Meaning, generally speaking, by Birchus HaMitzvah, it's one bracha. Over here, there are two brachas. One is said by the mul, the other one is said by the father. Okay, we'll come back and discuss it briefly. Ha'omdim omrin. Now, the people who are there observing the Mila. So after the second bracha is being said, what is their response? Geshem shenichnas lebris, kach yikanes lesora lechupa ulamasim tovim. So just like he came into the bris, so too, the baby should continue in both Torah, chupa, masim tovim, a lot of ortlach. Look, we're going to continue in the Gemara. V'amavarich omer asher kiddush yidid mi beten chok b'seiro sham v'tzetzav chasam ba'os b'ris kodesh alkein b'schar zos el chay echalkeinu sival ha'asil yididos sheirenu v'shachas aman b'riso asher sam b'fsarenu b'ruchat ha'ashem koreis ha'bris. And the continuation of this bracha of asher kiddush yidid mi beten. So, in terms of the nusach ha'bracha, so here in this follow-up, So Vasher Yidid, Asher Kiddush Yidid Bibetan. So the bracha over here praises the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sanctified the Yidid from his womb. Now, when we say the Yidid, the beloved one, who is that I'm making reference to? So Rashi over here writes, Asher Kiddush Yidid Mibetan, Yitzchak Kari Yidid. So Rashi says this is going back to the Avos, but not any of the Avos, but specifically Yitzchak. The Pasuk says, Asher Ahavta, when identifying which one of his sons he has to take out to the Akedah. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know, Asher Ahavta. I know we're not supposed to pick favorites, but Asher Ahavta. So the in fact, Avram says, I love them both. But Asher Ahavta, this is a reference to his son Yitzchak. So that's why the Yidid over here says, Rashi, is a reference to Yitzchak. You see Tosus over here, third Tosus on the Amud, Rabbi Natan says it's a reference to Avraham. In fact, Rabbi Natan goes and says that if you read the bracha carefully, you can see each of the Avos encrypted in the bracha. See Tosus 4, how he sees each of the Avos in the bracha. Anyway, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let's say it like Rashi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sanctified Yitzchak from his womb. By the way, for in defense of Rashi, meaning Avram did not get the bris at 8 days, and meanwhile, the bracha that we're saying over here for the bris that's done on 8 days, so presumably, we're the first model Av who got the bris bismano is Yitzchak. Okay, in defense of Rashi, and I'm sure there's a way to defend Rabbeinu Tam as well. Anyway, the Asher Kidesh Yidid Mi Beten, Chok B'Shei Rosam B'Tzetzav Chasam Bo'os Pris Kodesh, it is a sign that's put in, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu gave this mitzvah to his beloved in order to save us from Gehenna. So Laman Briso Asher Sambif Sarenu and Korei Sabris. And obviously, with this ratifies the covenant between us and the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Hamalas Agerim, we're just gonna finish up to the end of the parak, and then I'll come back to discuss the dual bracha. Hamalas Agerim, now if a mila is done to a ger, which is also part and parcel of the ger's process, but there's a bracha to be said as well. So here, the nusach of the bracha for a ger. And finally, amalas avadim. And then when you have an eved kenani, and now you bring him into your house, and you're going to give him a mila, we just discussed this a couple of days ago. So there's a bracha there to be said as well. Omer, Asher Kedishanu Mimitzvosav Tzivanu Al Amila, V'amavarach Omer, Asher Kedishanu Mimitzvosav Tzivanu Al Mol Es Avadim, U'lahatev Mehem Damrish, Yomalei Damrish, Chukos Shamayim V'Aretz Lo Nizkaimo, She'nemar Im Lo B'Si Yomam V'Layla, Chukos Shamayim V'Aretz Lo Samti, Baruch Atah Hashem, Karei Sabris, the Nusach Abracha for the Milas Eved Kenani. Let's go back for just a moment, and let's just quickly speak on the dual bracha. Tosus over here has a machlokus amongst the Balei Tosfos, and not just amongst the Balei Tosfos, but amongst two brothers amongst the Balei Tosfos, notably the Rashbam and Rabbi Natan. Rashi had daughters. One of the daughters married Reb Meir, and they had three boys. Three boys turned into Gedolei Ashkenaz. The oldest of the boy is Rabbi Shmuel. That's the Rashbam, Rabbi Shmuel ben Meir. He learned directly with his grandfather. He writes so in Parshas Vayeshev. That he learned with his grandfather, the second one, the Rivam, Rav Yitzchak ben Meir, and the third is Rav Yaakov ben Meir, known better to the world as Rabbeinu Tam. So over here, the brothers are arguing in terms of what should be the correct order of these two brachas. Take a look at the Tosfos, second Tosfos, Aviyah ben Omer, Rabbeinu Shmuel Garis, Aviyah ben Bereisha, Vahadar Hamal Omer. Ukvar hinig lasos kin levarach Aviyah ben Kodem Hamila Mishum de lahachnisa lahaba mashma. So the Rashbam says that his girsa of the Gemara is not the way we have it. Rather, according to the Rashbam, the bracha that's said first is lahachniso, and that's said by the father. And then only subsequently is the bracha of alamila going to be said. And the Rashbam says, first of all, just from a grammar standpoint, it makes more sense. He writes that when we say lehachniso, that's a lamed. And the Gemara Pesachim tells us that whenever you have a bracha opening up with the word lamed, according to everybody, that's lehaba. That means that's something that's going to happen in the future. And so therefore, the mitzvah of lehachniso, says the Rashbam, has to be said beforehand because it starts with the words le, with a lamed. And so that precedes the mila, and so therefore it's going to be said before the mila. And the Rashbam says, look, it's a birchas mitzvah. Now, to the question of why are there two birchas mitzvah? Okay, so there's much to be said about this, but for our purposes right now, just to get the highlights According to the Rashbam, both the bracha of Lahachniso and the bracha of Alamila both qualify as berachas and mitzvah. They both should be said prior to the Mila. The Lahachniso should be said by the father, and the bracha of Alamila should be said by the Mo'el. But they're both to be said beforehand. That is according to the Rashbam. Now, if this sounds curious to you, it's because we don't follow the Rashbam, but nevertheless, that's the way the Rashbam views it. Rabbeinu Tam Hichzer Aminagli Kad Muso. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, we're going to go back to the way we had it originally, meaning the Nusach we have in our Gemara, the Girsa in our Gemara. The Garas Hamal Bereisha Bahadur Avi Aben Kemosha Katsu Bechol Asfarim. Meaning, Rabbeinu Tam says, look at the manuscripts, meaning back in the day, the Balei Atosos, this is pre-printing press. And so the only Gemaras they had to work with were Sfarim, meaning they were manuscripts. And he says, and look around and check around, and the majority of them have it the way we have in our Gemara. The Chemucha Kula Sugim and Dikamer Omdim Sham Omrim Kishim Shenichnaso the Bris Mechlal Kishikvar Hichnisu. And just the way the Gemara reads, it sounds like the bracha of Lahachniso is coming afterwards, because then the Gemara talks about a response to that as well. The Ode Gabi Ger De Besamach Garz Bereisha Hamal. The Hadam Avarchom Rashi Kishan Mitzvah Zivan Lamos Ager Menira Hu Shizeu Keneged Brachos Avi Aben. And Tosus, I'm gonna pause over here at this point. And Tosus says, and by the gear, obviously it can't be said before, and it has to be said afterwards. He's a gear; he can't make the bracha beforehand. Anyway, Rabbeinu Tam says we're gonna work with our nusach, and that the bracha of Lach Niso is coming afterwards. Now it could be, and now this is the part where we're gonna go off the Tosfos. But it could be that Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashbam are having a fundamental debate in terms of the second bracha of Lach Niso. Is that a berachas mitzvah? Is that not a berachas mitzvah? According to the Rashbam, it is a berachas mitzvah, and therefore it should come beforehand. According to Rabbeinu Tam, it's not a berachas mitzvah. Now, that's a little bit challenging, because the nusach of the bracha is Asher Kedishan Mimitzvah Savit Sivanu, which usually is the tell, that's the tip, that it is a berachas mitzvah. But nevertheless, over here, maybe Rabbeinu Tam is not viewing it that way categorically, and that's why the bracha comes afterwards. And much more to be discussed in terms of the nature of these two brachas, but just in terms of the basic ideas of when the second bracha is to be said, machlok is between the Balei Tosfos in terms of whether the second bracha should be said beforehand, meaning we call it the second bracha, but really it's said in anticipation of the Mila, or according to Rabbeinu Tam, the way we do it, which is that we make the bracha afterwards. And if we're making the bracha afterwards, what is the nature of the bracha? What is that bracha going on? Okay, a lot of discussion to be had. We're finished with the 19th parak of Maseches Shabbat Hadron Alech Rebbe Elazar Demila, and let us begin this morning briefly the 20th parak. Here in the 20th parak, we're going to be going back to the topic of the creation of an ohel and assortment of other topics as well. A little bit of Agadata coming up here in this 20th parak, and let us get underway. Rabbi Eliezer Omer told us Mishmeres b'yamta v'nosin litluya b'shabbos. V'chachamim Omer ain told us Mishmeres b'yamta v'ain nosin litluya b'shabbos av nosin litluya b'yamta. We're here talking about a strainer that is put over a jar, meaning you're going to want to pour wine through the strainer, and so what you're going to want to do is first you're going to want to stretch the strainer over the top of the jar, making it like a lid over the jar, but not a lid, but rather a strainer, and then you're interested in pouring the wine through in order so that the strainer would strain the dregs. Now, all this during the week is great, but obviously on Yom Tov and on Shabbos, you have considerations of twofold. One, a consideration of borer. Obviously, by pouring the wine through the strainer and making sure that the dregs don't come in, so that is now separation of good from bad, and that's what's called borer. That's one consideration. And there actually is a second consideration, and that is that when you take the strainer and affix it to the top of the lid, so you're basically creating a tent, a lid, a top for the lid, what is called an asiyas ohel. Now, when I say ohel, we're generally speaking about a tent, and this obviously is not a permanent structure, so it certainly would not be a violation on a Torah level, but nevertheless, you are creating an ohel harai by putting it over the top. And so, therefore, there's another consideration that on Shabbos and on Yom Tov, one is forbidden from making an ohel harai. So, with these two considerations in mind, so what we are discussing and debating here in the Mishnah is what can you do on Yom Tov and what can you do on Shabbos. On Yom Tov, what you can do is you can strain. You can do borer on Yom Tov. Now, although I say that, it's not as black and white as I just suggested, but just for the understanding of our Mishnah, it's a good way to navigate through the Mishnah. On Yontif, however, you cannot make an Oel. So in the opening statement of the Mishnah, we're going to go over it again, Reb Elazar says that you can put the strainer over the lid on Yontif. Now that is going to require an explanation, which the Gemara will give, because that's a CSO hell, Vinosna Letulia B'Shabbos. And according to Rabbi Eliezer, if it already is hanging on Shabbos, meaning on Shabbos you cannot put it there. You can't position it. But if it's there, you can put it through on Shabbos. That also is going to demand an explanation in terms of why that should be. Now, according to the Chachamim, you can't hang it there on Yontif, meaning because that's a CSOL, and that is you're forbidden from doing. And even if it was already placed in before Shabbos, you can't pour it through Shabbos. But what the Chachamim do allow, the only thing they allow, is to pour the wine through on Yontif, because that's Borer, and in this context, Borer is Mutter on Yontif. That kind of takes us to the end of the Mishnah. Let us hold off on our Gemara's discussion till tomorrow, where the Gemara is going to ask the obvious questions, meaning according to Rabbi Elazar, how could you put it on in Shabbos? That's a CSO help. So Gemara is going to ask that question. We're going to respond to that question, and that will take us through tomorrow's daf and future as well. Okay, let's quickly recap our daf today. We started off with a very big sugya, one that comes up a number of times throughout Shas, and that's the idea of Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah. Is that when a person violates a Isser Kari, specifically over here Shabbos, but he's doing so in the context of he's trying to do a good thing, he's trying to do a mitzvah, so does that excuse him from bringing Karban Chatas? So this is the idea of Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah. The Mishnah gave us a scenario, and as we went through the Gemara, we had Machlokas Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua threefold, meaning in three different scenarios, each one of the Brises gave us a different angle and how to look at the Machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. In version number one, the Machlokas is riding on the case of Oseh, Tovid Var Mitzvah V'Asa Mitzvah. In version number two, it's Tovid Var Mitzvah V'Tarad B'Mitzvah. And version number three was really the most challenging, and we needed time to explain that third version. The next mission that we did talked about how, because of a circumstantial situation, the Bris Milah is going to be done anywhere in the range between 8 to 12 days, meaning mandated to be done either on day 8, 9, 10, depending on various halachic considerations. The Mishnah took us through those considerations. The baby is sick and is recovering from his illness. It was a choli shebechol haguf. It was entire body was ill. It wasn't just a wound. So under those circumstances, you need 7-day recovery. The Gemara analyzed how to count these 7 days. We spoke in the next Mishnah, on the bottom of the Amud to the top of the next Amud, we spoke about the anatomy and the tzitzit hama'akev. What exactly are going to be the shreds of skin that are going to be covering the atara in order that impedes the mila? Still, the baby is going to be considered an arel. Baby will not be able to eat truma, and what parts need to be excised? So the Mishnah gave us some detail. The Gemara gave us a little more detail in terms of how much of the arla needs to be cut off in order for the baby to have the status of being a mahul. The Mishnah mentioned briefly that if the baby is very fat, so more of the skin needs to be excised for purposes of maris ayin. The Gemara also discussed that briefly as well. And finally, we finish up the parak by talking about the brachos that is said over the mila. Two brachos that are said over the mila. We saw the machlokas rishonim, Rabbi Natan and the Rashbam, in terms of the second bracha, at what point in time is it said during the Mila? And we also spoke out briefly in the Nusach HaBracha when describing Asher Kiddush Yidid Mi Beten, who is the Yidid. Also Rashi and Rabbi Natan debate that as well. And we began the 20th parak of the Masechta, where you're putting a strainer over the lid. There are two halachic considerations, one Asiyas Ohel, and the other one is Borer. On Yontif, Asiyas Ohel is Aser, Borer would be Mutter, and so on Yontif, putting it on would be problematic, although Rabbi Elazar in the Mishnah says you're allowed to put it on. We're going to immediately tomorrow launch into the discussion of how is that allowed, and then on Shabbos, neither is allowed. Neither Asiyas Ohel or Borer is going to be allowed, but the only thing the Chachamim allow is just the straining on Yontif itself.